హరే కృష్ణ హరేర్ నామో హరేర్ నామో హరేర్ నామైవ కేవలం కలౌ నాస్తేవ 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 గతిరం. How many of you know the meaning of this verse? How many of you heard this verse? Very good. And I'm sure you know the meaning also. Anyway, those who don't know the meaning, this verse is from Brihannaradiya Puran. There are 18 Puranas, and one of them is Naradiya Puran or Brihannaradiya Puran. In that Puran, we find this verse. This verse says, besides chanting the holy name of the Lord, in the age of Kali, there is no other way, no other way, no other way for spiritual advancement. If anyone wants to make spiritual advancement, the only means is, what is the means? Please tell me. The chant. Yeah, go ahead. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There are many other means also. Especially, there are three other means of spiritual advancement. One is meditation, one is performing sacrifice, and another one is worshipping the Lord in the temple. So these are the three other means for spiritual advancement. In Satya Yuga, the process for spiritual advancement is meditation. Krite Jagdhayate Vishnu. Krite means, Krita Yuga means Satya Yuga. Satya Yuga is the first phase of the cycle of time. Time moves in cycle. Like, after every second comes another second, doesn't it? Then it grows larger, the concept of time grows larger. From second it comes to minute. Then after every minute comes another minute. Then the next larger concept of time is an hour. 60 minutes make an hour. After every hour comes another hour. Then the next cycle of time is, next largest cycle of time is a day. 24 hours make a day. After every day, after each day comes another day. In this way you can see how time moves in cycle. Although the concept of time grows larger, but the time actually moves in cycle. 7 days make a week, 30 days make a month, 12 months make a year. Now our calculation goes up to that. Modern man's calculation of time goes up to a year. That is the unit, the largest unit a man can think of in today's world is year. They are calculating everything in terms of year. But that is not the Vedic calculation of time. The Vedic calculation of time is 432,000 years make one yuga called Kali Yuga. Then the next yuga, the preceding yuga is Dwapar Yuga. Then the next yuga is Treta Yuga. And then the next yuga is Satya Yuga. Now these four yugas together is called one Chatur Yuga or Divya Yuga. So this four yugas together is a Divya Yuga. So that's another cycle of time. And in a way, that is just one small unit according to the Vedic concept of time. Sometimes people, due to Western education, think that the Indians in the past, they were not civilized. But that's a gross misconception. The Indian civilization was the most advanced civilization. Compared to Indian civilization, this today's modern civilization is just very, very insignificant. It's not even a civilization. That civilization was so advanced that this civilization, today's modern civilization, is actually barbarism, not civilization. Indian civilization was so advanced, and this we can understand from the profound understanding that they had in every sphere. Take any sphere. Take medicine. Consider the Indian understanding, the Vedic understanding. Consider physics. Like Indian physics was so advanced, like if you consider the Vaisheshika theory, they had atomic theory long time ago, and their atomic theory, the Vedic understanding of atomic theory, is far more refined than today's scientific understanding of atoms. In Shankara philosophy, they went even deeper. They analyzed the entire creation in 24 elements. For example, modern science doesn't even know what ether is. What to speak of mind. They don't even understand that mind is a substance. Modern science is actually not a science at all. It is gross ignorance. And the another sphere you can see, the concept of time that they have. Like consider the Vedic range of time. The smallest concept of time, according to the Vedic understanding, is the pulse of an atom. Pulse of an atom is all one can, according to the, like to conceive it according to the modern understanding, one can say the time that, just to give an idea, like what is the pulse of an atom, what does the pulse of an atom mean? That say the time that the electron takes to go around the nucleus in an atom, that is the smallest concept of time. Do the modern science know how much time it takes for an electron to go around the nucleus? No. And the largest amount of time they had is practically infinity. To give an idea how profound their understanding was, like I told you about one yuga. You know what was one yuga, one chatur yuga? One chatur yuga, the duration of one chatur yuga is 4.32 billion years. 4.32 billion years is one chatur yuga. And 1,000 such chatur yuga makes a day of Brahma. And the same is the duration of one Brahma's night. I'm sorry, 4.32 million years is one chatur yuga, and 4.32 billion years is one day of Brahma, and multiplied by 2, 8.34 billion years is a day of Brahma, night and day of Brahma. And in that calculation you calculate months, years, and the duration of Brahma's life is 100 years. This is Brahma's life. The Brahma of this universe is a four-headed Brahma. And there are universes that have eight-headed Brahmas, 16-headed Brahmas, 64-headed Brahmas, 6,400-headed Brahmas, million-headed Brahmas, billion-headed Brahmas. As the size of the universe grows, the number of Brahmas' head increases. And there are innumerable universes coming out from the pores of the body of Mahavishnu, who is lying in the causal ocean. And there are innumerable, like Vishnu's body is unlimited. the number of the pores of the pores of air in Vishnu's body is unlimited. You can't limit Vishnu's body. So there are unlimited universes are coming out of Vishnu's body. So this is how profound the Vedic understanding was. And when one accepts that understanding, the secret or the mystery of material nature becomes a lot more easier to solve for a man. Otherwise, basically everybody is in ignorance. Everybody is groping in the dark. No one practically knows what's the goal of his life. No one practically knows what's the significance of his life, why he is alive. He doesn't even know what life actually means. No one knows. Why? Because they do not have the knowledge. And this knowledge is available in the Vedas. When we approach the Vedas, then all these understandings become very clear. We get to know what life is. That also we can analyze with our practical perception. We can see that there are some objects that are inert and some objects that are alive. Like this harmonium is made of wood. Now this harmonium is inert, but you are alive. Now what causes the difference between the harmonium and you? We don't have to get so far as to you. I will say this harmonium is made of wood, and this tree that is outside this window that you can see is also made of wood. Isn't it? The tree is wood. But is there any difference between the harmonium and the tree? What is the difference? It has life. Right. And what is the symptom of life? The tree, if anybody observed the tree, then he noticed that in the beginning there was a small little seedling that came out. And then with time the tree started to grow. And within 10-15 years it took a huge shape. And still it is growing. And then new leaves are coming out, flowers are coming out in due time, due course of time. And then the trees are bearing fruits. And in the fruit there are seeds, and they are also producing other trees. Then if the tree is put into some inconvenience, it moves out. You put a tree in a dark room, what happens? And the tree starts to move towards light, doesn't it? You turn a tree upside down in a tub, what happens? Did anyone experiment? We did in school. You turn a tree upside down in a tub, then you'll find that the branches are going upwards, turning their course. But if you put the harmonium upside down, remember, turn around, upside down, will the harmonium grow with time? Will the harmonium produce some other harmoniums? If you put a male harmonium and a female harmonium side by side, after a few years, will you find a third harmonium produced out of them? No. You put the harmonium in some inconvenient position, will the harmonium try to move out of there? No. Now what makes the difference between this harmonium and the tree? What is the cause of that difference? I want some response from you. Consciousness, yes. Soul. It is the presence of the soul in the tree that makes the tree alive. And when the soul leaves the tree, then what will happen? The tree won't grow anymore. It won't produce any more new leaves. It won't produce any flower or fruit. So that then the tree will become dead. Now the presence of the soul makes all this difference. Now what is that soul? Now let's get back to us. As we said, like the difference between harmonium and us. We have a very clear understanding about us. Don't we say, I think this way, I feel this way, I want this, I want that. Now, who actually want this or want that? Obviously not this body. This body is made of matter. It is the presence of the soul that makes all the difference. Now, the Vedas are specifically dealing with the soul, understanding of the soul. Matter is irrelevant. Matter, the knowledge about matter, even a child can have. For that, we don't need big scientific knowledge to have the understanding of matter. Even a child can understand what matter is. He can see what matter is. He can feel what matter is with his senses. But the knowledge about the soul is not available by through our sense perception. We ourselves can never get to know about the soul. Although we are spirit souls, ourselves cannot understand what the spirit soul is. Therefore, the informations are necessary from higher source. The source that is aware of the spiritual reality, the spiritual nature, from that source we have to receive this knowledge. And that's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes a very clear statement. He tells Arjuna, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena shevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshina. Tadvidhi pranipatena, Arjuna, if you want to have this information about the superior reality, then you must approach a person who has the information about that reality. And you must approach in a very special way. Pranipatena, you must approach him in a humble way. Pranipatena means prakrishta rupena nipato, falling down in front of him. What does it signify? Falling down in front of him means I am surrendered to you. I am approaching you for the knowledge which I do not have but you have. Therefore, I am approaching you with all submission, with all humility. And pariprasnena, one must inquire sincerely. And shevaya, by service, he must win over his confidence. Then upadekshanti te jnanam, then only he will impart the knowledge. Because jnaninas tattvadarshina, because he has the knowledge, he has seen the truth. If he himself doesn't have the knowledge, how can he give you the knowledge? Therefore, the person that you are approaching for this knowledge must have this knowledge. And in this special way, when you approach him, then when he becomes pleased with you, he'll impart knowledge unto you. So this is a very, very specific way of understanding the spiritual knowledge. And in order to impart this knowledge unto the living entities, Krishna makes all kinds of arrangements. From the very beginning, at the time of creation, Krishna imparted the knowledge unto Brahma. In this way, Krishna actually made this knowledge available in this world, in this material nature, which is otherwise in ignorance. And then, from time to time, Krishna himself came. Krishna sent his representatives, associates, to impart the knowledge unto the living entities. 500 years ago, Krishna himself came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he again revived this knowledge when it was practically lost. And not only lost, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced a new system which was not available before. As I said, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, this process which is meant for the deliverance of the living entities in the age of Kali was not available in this world. But Krishna appearing as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made it available. The chanting of the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Now what happens when one chants this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? One's heart becomes purified. Cheto darpana marjanam. Our ignorance is due to our impurities in our heart. Our ignorance is due to our contaminations in our heart. So it can be compared to a light bulb that is covered with black paint. If the light bulb is covered with black paint, then even when the switch is on, will you see any light? There may be some dim reflection coming out, but there won't be any light as such. If there is a thick coat of black paint. Now the light is there, but it's covered. Similarly, the light of knowledge is there within our hearts. But due to our material conditioning, due to our sinful involvement in this material nature for so many lifetimes, our heart is covered. Our consciousness is covered. And Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, it rubs that dirt off, that black paint that is covering our consciousness. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra just starts to scrub it with a very powerful acid. And when we sincerely start scrubbing, then that black dirt that is covering our consciousness will be removed very soon. And when that dirt is removed, then what happens? Then automatically the light will come out. So this spiritual knowledge is not something that we have to borrow it or receive or get it from outside. It is there within us. It's just a matter of making it come out. Make it penetrate through the covering of our covered consciousness and come out. And that's what the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra does. Often people ask, what will happen if I chant Hare Krishna? The answer is, well, why don't you try it out yourself? It's something like somebody who is hungry and somebody gives him some food and he asks, what will happen if I eat food? An ignorant person may think like that, or a crazy man may think like that. He's hungry, he's dying of hunger, he says, I'm hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. And somebody comes and gives him a big plate of food. He says, what's the use of this? My hunger is in here. What this is going to do to me? No, if you take the food and put it in your mouth, and in due course of time as it goes to your stomach, then you yourself will see what the food does to you. And literally, your soul is starving. Our souls are starving. Our soul is a spiritual entity. And for so many zillions of years, it didn't get any spiritual food to eat. And this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is that spiritual food. And when we start chanting, our soul, which is starved for so many years, starts to get that food. And then what happens? How many of you are chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on a regular basis? Please raise your hand. Okay, now will any of you respond? Like, what happens when you start chanting? Did you feel any specific difference when you started to chant? Those who want to answer, please raise your hand. One hand. Why are you so shy? Two hands. Three hands. Very good. Any more hands? Mataji's hand. Okay, three hands, four hands, five hands, six hands. Okay, Mataji, will you tell me what happened?
I am getting peace and strength.
Okay, you are getting peace and strength. Will you tell me what happened?
Enjoyment.
Enjoyment, very good. All are very nice response. Anyone else? You want to say? Do you chant? Then what happened when you started to chant?
I feel happy.
You feel happy. Very good.
Forget everything.
You forget? No, don't forget everything. Okay, forget everything but remember Krishna. Okay, very good. Yes, you?
Eternal happiness.
Happiness, eternal happiness. Yes, so the point is, something happens when you start chanting. Doesn't it happen? Something happens, and what actually happens, according to all the responses we got from you all, is positive. It's not that once you start chanting, you get diarrhea. Did anything happen to you? Did anything happen like that happen to anyone? Or you lost all your money? Sometimes people think that. If you become a devotee of Krishna, then you lose all your money. You become poor. But I haven't seen anyone becoming poor after becoming a devotee of Krishna. On the other hand, I have seen that everyone becomes very rich in the Hare Krishna movement. The actual wealth is what? Actual wealth is? Yeah. The actual wealth is the lack of scarcity, isn't it? Actually, when one becomes a devotee, then he doesn't have any scarcity. He has everything. He has enough to eat. He has a nice place to live. And he has an eternal holiday. How many of you are working? Please raise your hand. How many of you have employments or business? How do you like it when the Monday comes and you have to go to your office? How do you feel? You look for the weekend, yeah. I think that's what everyone does. On Monday when he goes to the office, he starts counting, oh, today is Monday. Then he thinks, oh, today is Tuesday. And then when it comes Friday morning, he feels very, very happy. He feels, okay, now, somehow I'll just cover these days and 2 days of holiday. Now, can you imagine how wonderful it would be if you never had to go to your office? And everything was taken care of. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Huh? Now that is the case with the devotees. Like, devotees are literally enjoying an eternal holiday. Of course, that doesn't mean that they just eat and sleep. But they do something like, when you have a holiday, what do? When you have a holiday, yes, for some time you sleep. On Saturday morning, you have some extra sleep. You wake up at 11 o'clock. Not all of you, but some of you, probably. But then you go out and do things that you really like to do. Isn't it? Now when one becomes a devotee, he gets an opportunity to do things that he really likes to do. And what does the devotee... What is that that one really likes to do, really wants to do?
Service to Krishna. Service to the temple of the Krishna.
Okay, I will make... maybe I'll just elaborate it a little bit, just to give you some thread, some clue. Those who are not married but has a girlfriend, when the weekend comes, what happens? He goes out with his girlfriend, isn't it? So the most pleasurable thing is to go out with somebody and do things with someone whom you really love, isn't it? Or the parents, they take their children, the husband and wife take the children, because they like to spend their time with someone they really love. Now, in the ultimate issue, who do we really love? Our real love is for Krishna. Now, if you get an opportunity to be with somebody and do things for someone whom you really love, how will you feel? Is it such a difficult question to answer? you'll feel ecstatic. Now, Krishna consciousness is like that. Of course, that doesn't mean that those who are working or those who have business, I'm asking you to give up your business. No, I'm not actually asking you that. I'm asking you to carry on with all that you are doing, but do whatever you're doing for Krishna. Remember Krishna, always remember that everything that you are doing is for Krishna. And it will get a new dimension altogether. Like those who are cooking, if you know that you are cooking for somebody that you love, doesn't your cooking get a new dimension? Maybe I'll ask this question to the Matajis, those who are more into cooking. When you cook something for someone who you really love, how do you feel? You feel more excited about that. Now, if you cook for Krishna with your love for Him, how will you feel? I'm not asking you to stop cooking. Instead, I'm asking you to cook for Krishna. Similarly, if you like to do your business, then do it for Krishna. With the understanding that what you are doing for Krishna. Then your business also will have a new dimension. Those who are studying, if you feel that you are studying for Krishna, in that way, we can actually do everything for Krishna. And then whatever we do will become very joyful. And how do we begin? We begin with the chanting of Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. Actually, when I was, before I started to give the class, I thought that today I'll speak about Srila Prabhupada, but I got carried away. Anyway, so I can briefly, for a few minutes, I can speak about Srila Prabhupada. I'm sure all of you know Srila Prabhupada here. Is there anyone who doesn't know about Srila Prabhupada here? Everyone knows about Srila Prabhupada. So, do you all want to hear about Srila Prabhupada? So, this is actually Srila Prabhupada's quarters. Srila Prabhupada moved in to this quarters in 1977. When this temple was constructed, this wing, this unit was actually made for, was designed for Srila Prabhupada. And in 1977, March, Srila Prabhupada came to Bombay from Mayapur after Mayapur festival, Gaur Purnima festival, and at that time these quarters were not ready. But Prabhupada came here and he wanted to stay here. He said, I'm, even though it's not ready, I'm going to stay here. But the doors were not fixed, and to fix the doors, there would have been lot of noise during the day and Prabhupada would have been disturbed. So the devotees decided, the leading devotees here, decided that for this time, until this quarters is ready, let Prabhupada stay in the city. And at that time Prabhupada had a program in Cross Maidan. Srila Prabhupada came to Bombay to make a program in Cross Maidan. It was a huge arrangement, big pandal, and the devotees convinced Srila Prabhupada that it would be better for Prabhupada to stay in Bombay. Then Prabhupada won't have to commute, travel every day to the city and then back. Although the traffic was not so bad those days, but still it is a long distance. So Prabhupada was it was arranged that Prabhupada would stay in the house of Kartikeya Mahadeviya. So Prabhupada stayed there for a few during that program, and this place was actually completed. Then Prabhupada moved in. Prabhupada came in here and Prabhupada used to, that corner is Prabhupada's bedroom. Prabhupada used to sleep there. And this is the place where Prabhupada used to give darshan. When people came, Prabhupada used to give darshan from here. And in that table, Prabhupada used to translate. There was a dictaphone on that table. And Prabhupada used to translate. Prabhupada, at 11 o'clock at night, Prabhupada used to get up and start translating. And he used to keep on translating till the early morning. He barely used to sleep for 2 hours, 3 hours. And that's the table where Prabhupada used to sit and take prasad. And those days, Kamal Krishna Maharaj, Upendra Prabhu and myself, we used to serve Srila Prabhupada. And we used to stay, three of us used to stay in that room. The room next to that. And outside was Kamal Krishna Maharaj's secretary office. And there was the kitchen. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada set himself up in this place. And Prabhupada's health was quite bad at that time. And Prabhupada actually developed some sort of problem in his kidney, and as a result of that his legs were swelling up and he was feeling very uncomfortable. Prabhupada used to continue with his translation at night. Regularly he was translating. And I think when Prabhupada was in Bombay, he was doing the ninth canto, and Prabhupada's day was, he used to get up, after that Prabhupada used to take a little sleep, and then he used to brush his teeth in the bathroom there, and take his bath, and then Prabhupada used to sit here. And my duty was to come to Prabhupada at 7 o'clock with all the newspapers in English and Hindi. All the newspapers that were available, I would just give them. And Prabhupada wanted me to read out the headlines. So at 7 o'clock I used to read out the headlines. And if some news Prabhupada liked, Prabhupada would ask me to read it through. And sometimes Prabhupada would make some very interesting comments. One day, I remember those days, Indira Gandhi was very much in power, and one day Prabhupada started telling that how degraded that family actually was. The Nehru family, although it is considered to be one of the most aristocratic families in India, but that family was actually very, very degraded. And Prabhupada started to explain that when this kind of people become leaders, then naturally the country is going to die. And one such day, when Prabhupada's health was not so good, one day Sriman Narayan and Ramakrishna Bajaj, maybe you know them. Sriman Narayan used to be the governor of Madras, and Ramakrishna Bajaj is the man from the Bajaj Electrical, Bajaj Industries. and they are actually related to each other. Their Ramakrishna Bajaj's sister is married to Sriman Narayan. So they came to see Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was sitting in that seat, and there two of them were sitting there. And when they got to know that Prabhupada's health was not so good, they suggested that Srila Prabhupada go to Rishikesh. On the bank of the Ganges, the environment there is very pure, and the atmosphere is very nice. So they suggested that Prabhupada went there for a change. And Prabhupada liked the idea, and they actually made the arrangement for Prabhupada in a very beautiful house. It was not their house, one of their relatives' house, a house called Ganga Darshan. And they made arrangements for Prabhupada to go and stay there in Rishikesh. So one day Prabhupada decided to go to Rishikesh, and he, with four of us, no, three of us actually, Tamalkrishna Maharaj, Upendra Prabhu and myself, we flew to Delhi from Bombay, and then we drove. Dedicate yourself. Now, what is the difference between that material dedication and spiritual dedication? Right? That's your question? Just the difference is the difference of objective. Dedication is the same. You have to put yourself into it. You have to really get involved into what you are doing in order to achieve success. If it's half-hearted, then there won't be success. Now, in spiritual life, you have to dedicate yourself in the spiritual goal, or spiritual, to achieve the spiritual goal. Say, for example, in material life, in order to be successful, you have to dedicate yourself. But what is the goal? What is the goal in the material life? What is the materialistic goal? The materialistic goal is money, right? When one, the success of a person in the material life is judged by the amount of money he made. Therefore, in order to be successful, he has to make a lot of money. That's his goal. Or when one makes money, he wants to have power, or he wants to have fame. So this way, the material goal is money, name and fame, etc. But the spiritual goal is Krishna, our relationship with Krishna. So when one wants to make spiritual advancement, he has to dedicate himself to develop his loving relationship with Krishna, or love for Krishna. And that love actually develops as, or this love is relative to his awareness of Krishna. More he becomes aware of Krishna, the more he loves Krishna. Because Krishna is all attractive. So the person who is all attractive, if you become aware of that person, then automatically will become attracted to him. So that love is the ultimate goal. Spiritual goal, the ultimate spiritual goal is love. Prema pumartho mahan. Prema, prema means love, is pumartho, the ultimate goal of life. And in order to develop our love for Krishna, the best thing is to hear about Krishna and speak about Krishna. The more we hear about Krishna, the more we get to know Him. The more we get to know Him, the more we want to speak about Him. And in this way, the other things actually follow. The other aspects of spiritual life, like archanam, bandhanam, etc., they follow. Therefore, the difference actually is in our imposing our consciousness or our effort into Krishna or into our spiritual achievement. Like in the material platform, one wants to make money, but in the spiritual platform, one wants to love Krishna. He considers that his ultimate goal is to develop. It will automatically happen. About that it says, Rupa Goswami says, Bhakti Parishanu Bhava Viraktir Annatracha. That as one develops his attachment to Krishna, he automatically becomes disgusted with everything else. So it automatically happens. As one develops his love for Krishna, he develops his aversion to Maya. Why? Because Maya is trying to take away from Krishna, take him away from Krishna. Like, for example, if you love somebody and somebody is trying to come in between your love affair, how do you feel towards that person who is trying to come in between? You hate him. So similarly, as one develops his love for Krishna, he begins to hate Maya or hate this material attachment, because they try to come in between or take him away from Krishna. Not really. No. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, see, first of all, this economic development is an ultimate issue, is not due to your endeavor for accumulating wealth. It is due to your karma. Some people, you must have noticed, that some people, they have very, without doing anything, they make a lot of money, isn't it? And some people slog like a donkey, but they don't even make their two ends meet. Why is that? The pursuit, the running after money is not the goal, not the only means to get money. It is one's destiny that actually, one's previous karma, that actually causes one to get or lose money. So, about money, one doesn't actually have to worry about. Like, whatever is in his destiny, it will come in any case without even making any endeavor. Like, Prabhupada makes a point in this respect that sometimes, I mean, everyone runs after happiness. Everyone wants to be happy, right? Everyone tries to be happy. But still, misery comes. Although no one wants to be sad or suffer, no one wants to be miserable, but still, everybody at some point in time become miserable. Now, without making an endeavor, misery comes, right? So now we can draw a conclusion from that without making an endeavor, happiness also will come. If misery comes without invitation, then happiness also will come without invitation. And the other point is that, you see, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, one actually comes directly under Krishna's care. And who is Krishna? Krishna is the supreme proprietor, right? So now, tell me, if you are working for someone who is very rich and you are really in his good books and you are really trying to serve him with all your sincerity, do you think that your employer is not going to take care of you? So now, if you serve Krishna, if one serves Krishna, Krishna takes care of him. Therefore, a devotee never feels any scarcity. Krishna provides. Otherwise, come to think of it, like this movement is spreading all over the world in such a tremendous velocity, such a tremendous speed. Now, where all these resources are coming from? Our understanding is Krishna is providing. we don't really make a big endeavor ourselves. But things are happening by Krishna's divine arrangement. Therefore, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, materially also he doesn't have to worry about. Because Krishna takes care. After all, he is taking care of everyone. I mean, the food that we are eating, where does it come from? It's coming from Krishna, isn't it? The air that we are breathing, where does it come from? It's coming from Krishna. Krishna had made all these arrangements. And that also he made such a wonderful arrangement. We take oxygen, give out carbon dioxide. And Krishna made a perfect ecological balance. The trees are taking carbon dioxide and giving out oxygen. Who made this arrangement? Huh? Krishna made this arrangement. In this way we can see Krishna is taking care of us in such a wonderful way. Even when we do not care for Him, we do not want to serve Him, we don't want to love Him, still He takes care of us in such a wonderful way. Now if we really serve Him with all sincerity, won't He take care of us? And this is how a devotee doesn't have to worry about anything, even materially. Yes?
Whereas in India, the Brahmin families give importance to the Gayatri Mantra. So they perform a lot of yajnas in their house. And they say that this is the most powerful mantra. As we gather information from the Vedas, so compared to that Gayatri Mantra and the Maha Mantra, so is it more powerful than the Maha Mantra or is it on the lower level than the Maha Mantra?
Okay, the question is, in India, the Brahmanas put a lot of importance in Gayatri Mantra. They say that that's the most powerful mantra. Now, is Hare Krishna Maha Mantra more powerful than Gayatri Mantra? Or that's your question?
What is Gayatri Mantra?
Gayatri? Okay, very good. So, there's another question just came on top of that. What is Gayatri Mantra, by the way? Okay, so Gayatri Mantra is... The meaning of Gayatri is Gana Trayate Iti Gayatri. By chanting the mantra, one becomes delivered. The sound vibration, just by chanting that, one becomes delivered. That is called Gayatri. By singing this mantra, Gayatri has to be sung. There are seven kinds of chandas, seven kinds of meters, according to the Vedic understanding. One of that is called Gayatri Chanda. So Gayatri should be chanted with that meter. Must be sung, but sung internally, not externally. And this Gayatri generally has three aspects called Vij, Nam and Nyas. Vij is the seed. Generally, the Brahma Gayatri seed is Pranav. Pranav is Omkar. Om is the seed of Brahma Gayatri. And then in the middle is the Nam, and then come Nyas. The Nam is the name of the personality for whom that Gayatri is being chanted. Like there are different types of Gayatri. There is, as I said, Brahma Gayatri. Then there is Guru Gayatri. Then there is Krishna Gayatri. Then there is Kam Gayatri. There are various types of Gayatri. And chanting these mantras, one can get delivered. And then the third aspect of Gayatri is Nyas, or the elaboration, how one should chant the mantra. And the Gayatri is generally meditated. Gayatri mantra must be meditated. Alright, you understood? Gayatri. Now, you see, Gayatri is mantra. But Hare Krishna is?
Maha Mantra.
So now tell me, which one is greater? Maha means greater. And actually in the entire Vedas there are millions of mantras, but there is only one Mahamantra. Now the difference between Gayatri and Hare Krishna Mahamantra is that Gayatri must be chanted silently. You see, Gayatri you can't chant loudly. Gayatri is not meant to be chanted loudly. The Gayatri, when it is given, the Guru would whisper the mantra in the ears of the disciple, so that only the disciple would hear, no one else would hear. But Hare Krishna Mahamantra, one can chant silently and at the same time one can chant loudly. One can chant alone, one can chant together with many others. So that is the speciality of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. There are many other specialities of Hare Krishna Mahamantra also. The Hare Krishna Mahamantra, you see, as I said, Gayatri has Vij, Nam and Nyas, three aspects. Out of that, the most important is actually Nam, which is in the middle. Now, Hare Krishna Mahamantra is only Nam, only name. Name and name and name only. So the main composite element of Gayatri Mantra is the composite element of Mahamantra, without anything else. Mahamantra doesn't have Vij, Mahamantra doesn't have Nyas, but it is the perfect culmination of the Vija. Anyway, these are all details, no need to get into that. But the answer to that question is that yes, Mahamantra is the Mahamantra. And that is the means of deliverance for the age of Kali. Not anything else. Gayatri, how many people can meditate in this age? Gayatri has to be meditated, and through meditation the realization will dawn from within. That can happen only with the people, those who are already purified. But Hare Krishna Mahamantra, it is purifying, at the same time it is the goal in itself.
All these Brahmin families
will
not be delivered as such.
Some may be delivered, but very few of them. That also. In the age of Kali, Ashuddha Shudra Kalpa Ki Brahmana Kali Shambhavam. In the age of Kali, even the Brahmanas have become like Sudras. How many such Brahmanas are there? You see, Brahmanas, a sign of a Brahmana is he has fire in his mouth. By chanting mantra he can light fire. That is one of the signs of a Brahmana. So how many of them can do that in this age? In this respect there is a very nice episode in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. You see, Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family. So Advaita Acharya, who was a very respectable Brahmana of his time, during the Shraddha ceremony of his father, after his father passed away, during the Shraddha ceremony, he offered the Shraddha Patra, that is the plate of Shraddha, to Haridas Thakur. That is actually meant to be given to the highest Brahmana. But he gave it to Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Muslim family. And as a result of that, the Brahmanas there got very, very upset. And they ostracized Advaita Acharya. They said that he is casted out of the Brahminical community. And that day, a very strange thing happened. As they were trying to light fire, the fire won't light. They couldn't perform their yajna. They couldn't cook. And as they were lighting the fire, they made all kinds of effort to light the fire, but immediately it will get extinguished. Even they tried to bring the fire from other villages. But as soon as they came to the village, the big pot of fire, blazing fire, would immediately get extinguished. And then they realized that maybe it's because they have offended Advaita Acharya by ostracizing him. So they approached Advaita Acharya, said, "Please forgive us, something happened, Since that time, we can't light the fire anymore. So Advaita Acharya said, well, you all are Brahmanas. There should be fire in your mouth. Why don't you prove your Brahminical qualities by making fire come out of your mouth? And then they begged their forgiveness. Then said, look, the offense was not to me. The offense was actually to Haridas Thakur. You fail to recognize the greatest Brahmana. Because he is Brahma himself. Haridas Thakur, although he is born in a Muslim family, but he is Brahma himself. So who is the greater Brahman in this universe than Brahma?
So the incarnation of Brahma.
Yeah. Haridas Thakur is an incarnation of Brahma. Okay, so now we can have a little kirtan. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama Iva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Bhakiranatha. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama Iva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Bhakiranatha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you.
मनंदे हरि हरि बोल। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जगत गुरु श्रील प्रभुपाद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की श्रील प्रभुपाद सेंटिनल सेलिब्रेशन की समवेत भक्त वृंद की बोल प्रेमानंदे हरि बोल। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरांग, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्रील प्रभुपाद।
You all know that we are going to do this book distribution marathon.
Now those of you who read Srila Prabhupada's book, did you find something very special or very unique about these books? How many of you feel that way? How many of you feel that these books have changed your lives? Now, did it change your lives for your benefit? For better?
Yes.
You did. Now, if it changed your life for the better, do you also want to help others to change their lives?
Huh?
Now, what is the best way to do that? So that is why we put so much emphasis on this book distribution. Not that we are actually running a business, you know, selling the books. Actually, we sell our books practically at cost price. And then, with the overheads and all, we run at a loss. But still, we want to distribute these books because our mission is to spread the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is why we put so much emphasis on book distribution. So please, to the best of your ability, try to distribute. Even if you can distribute a few books, please try to do it. Because by doing that, you are actually benefiting others. And as a result of benefiting others, and you are going to benefit yourselves too. So please, try to give out these books to the people that you care for. And you will see, in this way, this movement actually is going to spread. This world is in a very, very precarious condition. I'm sure you all feel that to some extent. Huh? Do you think that the world is in a very nice situation now? Not at all. The world is in a very, very precarious condition. Now, who is going to save this world from this situation? Huh? Is President Clinton going to change it? or our Nrisimha Rao is going to change it? Huh? They are not going to. They won't be able to do anything. They haven't been, all these political leaders in the past haven't been able to do a damn thing, and they will not be able to do a damn thing in the future. And as a matter of fact, the world situation is becoming worse and worse.
Day by day.
Day by day. Now what can save the situation? What can actually save this world? If you ask me, I'll very boldly say the message of Srila Prabhupada, the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the message of the Vedas, our eternal heritage. This Vedic wisdom is the only solution to the crisis of this world today. And they have been presented in a most expert way, in a most sublime way, by His Divine Grace. So if you do care for the future of this world, we'll humbly request you, please distribution of this world. Thank you very much.